You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thursday edition of Locked On NBA is underway. I'm David Locke along with Ben Golliver. We are back together again. We took a little hiatus. Well, you and Nick talked last week. I think the week before I screwed up. I don't actually know what's going on. It's been a while, Ben Golliver. I miss you. How are you?
Oh, it's great to hear your voice, Locke, as always. We are getting so close to the season. It was funny, like, everyone's saying, hey, James Harden's a little bit, you know, late to camp, and he's a couple days partying in Vegas and Atlanta and all this. And I looked at the calendar, and I was like, well, he's not just a little bit late to camp. Like, they're going to have to play their first game in 2 weeks. He's barely going to have cleared the coronavirus protocol by then, Locke. So it's coming quick for us.
You came out of the bubble, you know, and you've been writing your book. Like, are you are you fired up for this? Are you getting going? For me, you know, on a personal note, it's just so dramatically different than any other season I've ever done in the, you know, I don't want to admit how many years, 30 plus years that I've been in the NBA. You know, so it's been really weird for me. I'll be really quite frank that, like, as a play-by-play announcer, like, to have training camp going on and not being there every day, like, that's what gets me fired up for the season. It's like, I go to training camp and I see the guys and I see what Quinn's working on, and I'm all of a sudden I'm really geeked, and like, to not be doing that is really, really strange. What is your vibe? Like, are you ready? Are you like finding storylines? I mean, like, oh, this is going to be fascinating. What's your thought?
No, I'm definitely ready. I mean, Thanksgiving was kind of the turning point for me. Before Thanksgiving, I was just dreading this idea of the season coming so quickly, and was I going to be able to wrap my mind around it? I think after that Thanksgiving break, I was like, look, you love basketball. You know, you're going to want to watch these games. You're going to want to have your summer back next summer, you know, potentially, if they're able to keep the season on track and all that. So I understood the NBA's logic there. It's absolutely a tight turnaround. The book makes it a lot more complicated. I think once I'm, you know, finished with the manuscript and have sent that off to the publisher, I'm going to feel really great and just be able to completely focus. But I'm with you. Like, I love media day. And you're talking about training camp. Like, media day was one of the first things I ever got to cover when I was in Portland. I remember coming home from that thing and writing, I don't even know how many words, 4,000, 5,000 words about all the, just the kind of the empty quotes that you get out of media day. It's just the excitement, the atmosphere, you know, which guys seemed happy to be there, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And just to have it take place on Zoom this year, to just, you know, guys are doing it on different days because of the coronavirus protocols. Not everybody's even completely gathered with their teams at the same time. I mean, all this happening very gradually. And then some teams, unfortunately, needing to shut down their practice facilities because of positive tests. It's very different. It's a little bit scary. You know, talking to some of the executives around the league in terms of how they're mentally preparing for this season, I think that some of them feel overwhelmed and exhausted because they've got to have all these new rules. They're going to be held accountable to, you know, keeping their players safe and abiding by all the coronavirus regulations. The NBA has told them, we can fine you, we can have forfeited games, we can do unannounced spot checks if you're not you know, handling things properly. So there's a lot for everybody to adjust to. And it's just one of those seasons, I think, where they're all just trying to bite the bullet and get through it. And they're all just hoping, hey, one day at a time, once this entire thing gets into motion, maybe then it will start to feel like normal.
So I have a theory on one of the aspects that's not been talked about. We'll talk about Harden in a second. That's the big story. We'll line that up. Then I want to talk to you about teams that you think might be better than what everybody else does, or maybe a team you think is worse than everyone else. So we'll touch on that. But I have an interesting thought here, or at least I think team chemistry is going to be more important than ever before. Because the group's travel is going to be so restricted. And like, the idea that, you know, you used to go out for dinner, I don't know how much these teams are going to have their players going out for dinner. I actually think what's going to happen more often than not is they're going to have a set place where they're going out for dinner, where the whole team is invited. So it's a team dinner every single night you're on the road. And this is your social circle now, because obviously there'll be some side-offs, but they don't want two guys going to this restaurant and three guys going to this bar and two guys going there. And so they're going to say, hey, you know what? We're in Oklahoma City. We've got the back room at Mahogany, and every, you know, 7 o'clock, we'll have four buses going to the dinner. And if you are the at last year's LA Clippers and you don't like each other, that's not good.
Exactly right. I think that was one of the biggest takeaways from the bubble. Your chemistry had to be good. Otherwise, you were going home early. You mentioned the Clippers. You could also put the Sixers, maybe even the Milwaukee Bucks into that category as well. And all the teams that stuck around in the bubble that made it through the playoff gauntlet were teams that had really good chemistry. Start with the Lakers. All the focus on the talent of LeBron and Anthony Davis. Don't forget about the chemistry that they were able to show the whole way through. The Nuggets obviously had great chemistry. There's a lot of reasons for them to be excited with Murray playing so well, Jokic playing so well, and keeping everybody involved. And in the Eastern Conference, I thought the three best teams in the bubble all had spectacular chemistry. They were together and aligned. The Boston Celtics, Toronto Raptors, and of course the Miami Heat as well, who wind up taking the conference. So I think you're dead on. In terms of the rules, they are saying on the road it's like pre-approved restaurants only. They don't want guys going to bars. Certainly they don't want, public scenes like what Harden was getting into, not wearing a mask and in clubs. I mean, that's going to get you some calls from the league office. There's really no way around that. And so for sure, it's a big factor this year as they go forward. And, there's got to be trust levels too. Guys have to believe that their teammates are following the rules, that they're not going to get sick because someone was, staying out late or whatever else it might be. And so it's going to be a big adjustment. And I do think that among the players, there was this real sense like, we don't want to go back to do the bubble, right? The bubble was so hard mentally, and we were isolated from our families, and we didn't want to do that for 6 months. I completely understand that mentality, but this does kind of feel like it's a moving bubble, right? Like, yes, you get to see your families, of course, during the regular season, which is great, but you're going to be bouncing around from city to city to city, and it's going to be all of the worst parts of traveling without the best parts of traveling, right? I mean, and you're going to have these games on the road, and it's going to be all of the worst parts of going on the road in terms of the flying and the logistics and getting used to different gyms and everything else without the best parts, which is, getting to play in front of these different crowds and having the full building atmosphere like when you go to MSG and everything else. This season's going to be a grind lock. It's going to be really, really tough on these players and coaches.
All right. One of them is going to be James Harden. Let's start with this. Where's he going to play? He will wear what uniform next?
Well, look, to me, the one that makes the most sense is Brooklyn. I think that they have the most motivation to give up a lot of assets, right? And I think, unfortunately, Houston has just done a really bad job of managing the trade values of their key players. Like, just take a contrast with New Orleans and Drew Holiday. They just wait for the right moment. They keep a positive relationship with Drew Holiday. They wait until Milwaukee comes along really needing a point guard to upgrade over Bledsoe. And they execute this great, very well-timed trade right at the start of free agency where they're able to get a whole boatload of picks and a couple players coming back and everything else. Just very smooth, smart management. But you look at Houston, they backed themselves into a corner. I thought in the Westbrook deal, you're taking back an incredible amount of injury risk with John Wall and what's remaining on his 3 years of his contract to only get one protected pick deep into the future. I didn't think that was a very good trade. To me, that was evidence that they had sort of basically squandered whatever trade value that Russell Westbrook might have had coming off a year where he played, fairly well at times during the regular season. I think it's the same thing with Harden. Like, it got really messy over the last month or so, but particularly in the last week, I think everybody realizes he wants out. Bringing him onto that team is going to make it very difficult to have the kind of chemistry that we've talked about just now, but also to see guys like Christian Wood step up and whoever else is going to be part of your future core for them to kind of get, settled in and comfortable. I look at James Harden and John Wall. I see a poor basketball fit. I don't see either one of those guys moving off the ball when the other one's dribbling. And I don't think that they make each other really better in any way. From that standpoint, if I'm Houston, I'm highly motivated to deal, even if I have to sell low. And I think with Brooklyn, you can kind of bowl them away with draft picks. At least Houston can kind of save face. After the Chris Paul trade, you're going to be able to get some picks back, some quality players back. You're not going to make the playoffs if you're trading James Harden for Caris LeVert and all that. But I think it's better than nothing. And I think a lot of other teams around the league right now are going to be looking at James Harden saying, yes, he's a great player, but the season's about to start. We're kind of already have the gears in motion. How does he fit with our groups? What else is going on off the court and just deciding, hey, that might not be worth it. We're not going to bring, an A-plus trade offer at this moment.
He's Ben Golliver, Washington Post national columnist. Where did the James Harden situation go wrong? It's worth a little bit of a retrospective on that. We'll look at that. And then teams that we think are better or teams that may be not as good as everyone thinks. That's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On NBA. Ben just talked about mental health and things like that. I will admit that I always used to say, well, if I ever had the time, I would work out and I would meditate. Well, I have had the time because of COVID. I am now working out every day, and I actually have started meditating. I've done it for a while. It took me a while. Now, like, you want me to start talking about meditation, I will not stop because it is making me sleep better. I think it's making me calmer. I'm in. Like, it's one of those things. And so Headspace is a daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditation, easy to use app. Headspace is the one and only meditation app advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace can really help you feel better. Overwhelmed? Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Help falling asleep? So I think Ben would probably relate to this. I have the 3 a.m. brain. Do you have the 3 a.m. brain, Ben?
Of course, especially certain times of year.
Right.
You know, it's just going and going. You can't wind down, right?
So I've actually started meditating before I go to bed, and I don't have – it's kind of gone away. Like yesterday I woke up at 6:15, right when my alarm went off. None of the 3 a.m. brain. It's been pretty great. So check it out. Go to Headspace and find out whether you can have the same experience. Headspace.com/LockedOnNBA. You deserve to feel happier. Headspace is the meditation made simple. Headspace.com/LockedOnNBA. Free one-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. That's Headspace.com/LockedOnNBA. Free one-month trial. When did this James Harden thing really go wrong? Was it another playoff loss? Was it what I think is the death of, oh, we're going to involve our superstar in all of our decisions, but then we might not listen to him and now he's pissed. Where did this go wrong?
Well, I mean, to me personally, it was probably when Tillman Fertitta bought the team. I think that I look at the Leslie Alexander era of being very stable, you know, kind of a model owner. That franchise had a lot of success, a lot of alignment from everyone. And I think that Tillman Fertitta brought a different personality. I think he brought, you know, different hierarchies within the organization. I think he challenged his players publicly at some pretty raw moments after playoff losses. And I think he just set a kind of a different tone. And when things go so wrong so quickly, I always kind of say, you know, the buck stops at the top, right? So I would say that was one major pivot point. I think the other one was the Chris Paul trade. And I think that they needed all to go to couples counseling that summer. They had to find a way to put that thing back together. If they had had another year with Chris Paul, look, it might have blown up after that year, but they certainly would have been better than the Russell Westbrook experience was. And they would have been able to get much better trade value for Chris Paul than Russell Westbrook was able to deliver this summer. So to me, those were a couple of the big moments. But I think you're right. Harden has to figure into all these things. He can't just kind of walk away from this and be kind of, you know, get off the hook scot-free. His fingerprints have been all over the major decisions that Houston has made over the last 5, 6, or 7 years, and they have done everything possible to cater to him. So when you're looking at, like, the more recent time period, though, I think the decision to, you know, lowball Mike D'Antoni shouldn't go under discuss, right? I mean, that kind of put a strange cloud over all of last season, and he winds up departing, and he had a pretty functional relationship with Harden, and now you have to do a coaching change where Harden's feeling like he's a little bit blindsided by that in terms of who you're hiring. And then I also think, if you had a little bit more stability from the top down, maybe Morey doesn't want to leave too. And I think ultimately, like, he was the guy who could always get through to Harden and find a way to keep everybody together. He was kind of the connective tissue. And once he was out of there, I just assumed everything would go crazy, you know, basically immediately. And that's exactly what's happened.
You know, it's the point I was making, and I think you're right. Like, does it go to the firing of Morey? Does it go to the firing of D'Antoni? You can call him whatever you want, but they both took jobs like a week later. So that's firing. but when they were like engaging James Harden in the coaching search, like, I get it. Like, you want to empower your players, and we're in the power. Okay, but the minute you do that, when they say they want a coach, that's who you're hiring. Like, you can't engage a player like you would your director of marketing and then tell them, yeah, well, you know what, the CEO makes the decision. Like, that's not how this works.
For sure. And look, I think that they also painted themselves into a corner because for so many years, it was sort of like what James wanted, James got, right? And so at that point, you've already set the standard. So yeah, he's walking into that meeting thinking he's going to get exactly what he's wanting. He doesn't feel like he's being consulted. He feels like he's picking, right? And you know, that's a difficult situation. I think if I was Houston, I mean, I really think this comes back to Fertitta. Look, he inherited a really good team from Leslie Alexander. I mean, that team was in position, you know, one of his first years as owner to go win 60-plus games and go to the conference finals. I think that the team he inherited, though, has now been broken. Chris Paul's gone. Trevor Ariza's gone. A lot of these other players are gone. P.J. Tucker's going to want out pretty soon because he hasn't been taken care of financially. The coach is gone. The GM's gone. And so at this point, it's still James Harden's team, though. Even though all these pieces have changed, it's still James Harden's team. And I think if you're Fertitta, this is kind of the moment of truth for you, right? If you trade Harden, it becomes your team. You can rebuild it in your mold. You can prioritize the type of players and the playing style that you want to play. It's no longer this idea of like, okay, I inherited Harden, so I've got to inherit, you know, all the relationships and all the events that happened before I got here. You can start fresh. I think that has an awful lot of value for the Rockets and for Fertitta in particular, in part because when you have Harden on your roster, you've got sky-high expectations every single year. He wants to win a title, and people expect you to be in that contender conversation. If you trade him, you can be terrible, you can rebuild, and you can give yourself a few years of breathing room to kind of put together the next the next era of your franchise. That's what I would do if I were them, and that's why I would even sell low on Harden if you have to. Look, he is not going to help you that much this year, and then he's going to be on an expiring contract. If you want to play that stare-down game with him, I just don't think you're going to win it. Like, I think he has the ability to take your season sideways in a whole bunch of directions.
So I love James Harden. I think he's a basketball genius. I think he's maybe one of the greatest offensive players we've ever seen, maybe the greatest. Can he, like, does he push Philadelphia or Brooklyn over the edge?
I think that in Brooklyn, he raises their floor, I guess is the way to put it, right? I think there's still a question about would they have a championship ceiling in the first year together, but I think he raises their floor for sure because now your offense has Harden or Durant on the court at all times. I think it marginalizes Kyrie a little bit, but I think it turns you into a team that should win, you know, the equivalent of 55 games basically no matter what, right? And I'm not quite sure that Brooklyn's at that level right now because of KD's health and because of Kyrie coming off of his issues and just his general inconsistency as well. So to me, it would make the difference for Brooklyn. It would set them up really well for the following year if you had those two guys. In my dream scenario, they would then turn around and trade Kyrie, get him, you know, a little bit more depth on the rotation and build that thing around KD and Harden. But maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here. In terms of Philadelphia, I think the question for them is not, does he make them a contender right now? It's just, is that worth it from a long-term perspective, right? If you've got Ben Simmons locked in for the next 5 years, would you rather have 2 years of Harden and then a question mark about trying to re-sign him, or would you just rather have the known quantity in Simmons? I can actually see both sides of that debate. I would probably prefer Harden still because of what you're describing, the offensive genius, the fact that he's, you know, always in that scoring leader conversation. And, you know, he fits pretty well with, you know, 3-and-D type players, and you can build offenses that are really good around him without too much work. I could also see people saying, look, just keep running it back with Simmons and see what happens. So I think he makes a difference. I think he's worth trading for. I realize his reputation has never been lower because he's throwing the money around and he's not wearing a mask and he's violating all the protocols. He's letting his teammates down and all that kind of stuff. But I think that a savvy GM would do sort of like what Masai Ujiri did when he swooped in and grabbed Kawhi. And that is, you know, buy low on a really, really talented player and hope that he can deliver with a change of scenery.
So what's interesting to me on Harden is I've never been one who kind of buys into like the bad playoff Harden or that, but I guess I'm at a stage now where I wonder, can he go back to playing like OKC Harden? Because that's really what he has to do, right? If he's going to go to one of these places, he can't do what Mike D'Antoni just let him do. And frankly, there is a point where when you're coming at someone 60 times a night from the exact same spot in the exact same way over a 7-game playoff series, they figure it out. And so I'm curious on where his head is as a player and what he needs to do. What is he willing to do? Like, is he going to let Kyrie and KD and he assimilates with them? Or does he still need it and need to massage it and just play with it and let it go and like take over that way? Like, I'm so, that's my doubt on him right now, is where is he as a player? And then I'll honestly, with the amount of playoff failures he has, it does feel a little bit like a cop out. Like, yeah, I'm done. I'm going to Brooklyn with those guys so they can carry me.
I hear you. I mean, I've defended Harden as much as I can over the past 5 or 6 years, but the way I would say it is his last week has been indefensible, right? There's no excuse for him not to be wearing a mask. There's no excuse for him to not to show up at training camp. There's no excuse for him to have no communication with his new coach. This is a guy who's getting paid $40 million a year and has been the face of the franchise for 8 seasons. I completely believe that he's got justifiable grievances with how the Rockets have handled things. But those things I just listed off, you've got to be better than that if you're a franchise player. You just do. I mean, the standard is so high. And if you want to be a guy who wins a title, and Harden always talks about him wanting to win a title, the standard's an awful lot higher than just showing up for work, right? I mean, you've got to be a leader. You've got to have everybody believing in how you want to play basketball, and you've got to be setting the tone for your teammates and for the new season. So I think at this point, you know, a lot of the over the years, a lot of the criticisms of James Harden to me have not been valid or they've been overstated. I think right now, basically any criticism that you want to have of James Harden, go ahead and have it. You know, I mean, this has not been his finest hour.
But I got to say, I think I'd take him. Like, I don't know. Like, if I'm Denver, do you take him? If you're
Don't you want to take him on behalf of someone else? That's the problem, you know? It's like, how many teams want to take him for themselves? I think that's kind of the question right now. Like, if I said, do you want him in Utah? How would you feel?
I don't have to give up Donovan and Rudy.
You're ready to roll the dice?
I still have Donovan and Rudy?
Yeah, sure. Conley is the centerpiece and maybe one other guy, and you're sending back 3 picks.
I'm in.
Oh, I love it. All right.
Oh, yeah. I think
the dice.
Because what he does with Gobert would be amazing.
It would be fun. Look, I mean, that's the thing. If you play fantasy basketball and you just say, like, okay, which other cores around the league, like, take personalities and egos and, like, you know, touches and all that stuff out of it, and just, like, you know, what are some dream fits? There's a lot of fun places you could put them, like New Orleans. Like, that would be pretty fun. Him and Zion, that could be pretty fun. But I think just unfortunately with these superstars, they have such a short list of places they want to go. They always want to play with their friends, and it just makes it more difficult.
We're really close to Vegas, though.
You're going to have the plane ready for him?
There's a rumor that he like stopped by on the way once along the way. Gary Harris and Will Barton, along with, I don't think they actually have any more big contracts. I don't think they don't have enough big contracts to get it done. I don't think. That works actually. Gary Harris, Will Barton, and picks. Do you do it if you're Denver?
I do it if I'm Denver, yeah, for sure. Because, like, they were right there. And I think that, I mean, it was such a bummer that Jeremy Grant made the decision that he made, because when you're a team that's in the Western Conference Finals, have a shot to give back, have this rising duo that's awesome, like, you just expect talent to kind of stick there and not want to leave. And they need a boost now to kind of get up. And I would say, yeah, roll the dice for sure. I think that I wouldn't want to be in charge of the defensive game plan if I had Murray and Harden coming at me. That sounds like a horrible night.
Yeah, it'd be pretty interesting. All right, he's been Golliver. That's got me all choked up. Teams that we think are better than other people or less good than other people. Next, when we continue here on Locked On NBA. Locked On Fantasy Basketball is the number one fantasy basketball show in the world. Josh Lloyd's hosting it, and it's here for you on the Locked On Podcast Network. So subscribe on iTunes. Follow on Spotify. It's Locked On Fantasy Basketball. I think the New Orleans Pelicans are better than anyone realizes, sir. Shall I try to sell you, and shall I unsell you all at the same time?
I am definitely open to being sold on them. I just think that some of the fits are weird and hard to wrap your mind around, but I also, you know, I'm assuming you're expecting the coach to bring about what, 5, 6, 7 wins this year?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the first part of it, is that they've always been in my systems much more highly regarded than they performed. So that's the first thing. Yeah, I don't think Alvin did a very good job, and so I think Stan Van Gundy brings something to him. I have a system by which I look at NBA teams. I call it 25 plus. How many players on your roster are you comfortable playing 25 minutes plus, right? So the Lakers are loaded, right? The Lakers have got 9 guys. LeBron, Schroeder, Wesley, KCP, Morris, AD, Kuzma, Gasol, and Harrell. I don't even have Caruso on that list. They might have 10. 25 minute plus. New Orleans has got 8, legit. Ball, Bledsoe, JJ, Ingram, Hart, Zion, Adams. And I think Jackson Hayes, I probably feel, maybe not. Maybe he's not quite ready. Fine, he's your backup center. They got 48 minutes of rim defense. They've got multiple pick and roll ball handlers. I actually am not the biggest Drew Holiday fan in the world, so that's probably part of this. Like, I don't think that step back's as big as everyone wants to make it. I like New Orleans a lot.
I'm with you. I mean, look, they played great with Zion on the court last year. They, you know, it was a whole thing about their identity changing multiple times where, like, he's not there to start, and then he comes back, and then he doesn't play well in the bubble. And so for guys like Ingram, you know, they're constantly looking around saying, like, what's my job? My biggest concern with the Pelicans, you know, basically, does Zion fit with Ingram? And then if you're playing Zion and Adams together, is there enough room for Ingram to do what he does well, or does he wind up kind of getting marginalized? But I think that there's a lot of talent like you're describing. My other concern with them is just it's a lot of regular season talent. You know, I love that 25 minutes per game standard you're using. There's also the whole idea of, like, how many guys are 16-game players, right? Like, how many of those guys do you really trust in the playoffs? And they might be at 0 right now, or like 1 or 2. I mean, it's not very many, right? So I think that's a different question, though. If you're just saying, like, who's going to be able to overperform their regular season win projections, I think they've got a decent shot to do it for sure. And they should be fun. And I'll admit, I was sleeping on them a little bit. I got so caught up in the idea of, like, Luka coming back and being, like, the best show in the league. And I've really been focusing a lot on that. Whereas Zion, when he was playing well before the break, was just an unbelievable, just like force of nature, watch him every single night, you know, game-changing presence on both sides. And I hope he looks like he's in shape. He seems like he's in a good spot. He said no minutes restriction. So that's all positive for them. And I really think it starts with him.
The trade that was made in the offseason that has me kind of most mesmerized right now, trying to figure out what I think of teams, is the Dallas-Philadelphia trade. Because when it was made, I was like, that is a huge win for Dallas. Like, I was all in trade night, thought it was amazing. Like, the more I've researched that trade, like, Seth Curry was the best shooter in the NBA last year by a mile. Like, it's not actually close. Like, you go to, like, catch and shoot, three-point shooting, he shot 20 percentage points higher than his expected value. Like, he can really shoot it. And Josh Richardson really can't. Like, I get what they – like, I almost wonder, like, Dallas was the best offensive team ever in the history of the NBA last year. And so they made this slight pivot that we got to be better defensively, and they certainly did that, right? They've got these athletes around Luka. But I wonder if they're going to really miss that shooting or not, or whether they'll just be enough better. I'm really mesmerized by that. And then I start thinking about Seth Curry and Philly – and all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a sec. Maybe they're way better than I think they are.
I think he's going to be a really important piece for Philly. I like that move for them a lot. But I still like it for Dallas. I mean, here's the thing. Like, the regression to the mean argument would be that Seth Curry is not going to be quite as good as he was last year, this year. And that Josh Richardson, who seemed unhappy, in my opinion, in the bubble and did not fit at all in Philadelphia and didn't really have a lot of guys to set him up for large parts of the season, is going to shoot much better this year than he did last year. So I think that, you know, they calculated that they were so weak in the defensive length and physicality on the perimeter department that they just had to do. And I think it's a reasonable bet. They still have a lot of offensive weapons. I mean, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. for sure, but also, you know, Porzingis, when he comes back, you know, they're going to be able to play 5 out again. So I think their offense will be worse than last year, which isn't exactly saying a lot because, you know, they had the best offense of all time, like you're describing. But I think their balance will be better. I think their lineups will be more stable. I think it's going to be a nice fit. So I'm still, I think it's a win-win, actually, for both sides. I didn't think Philly screwed up or anything. And I think both players are going to wind up playing well, but I guess I'm making the regression to the mean argument on those guys. And I think that Richardson's going to shoot better. Curry might shoot a little bit worse, and Dallas will come out looking better for it.
All right, so I was there with you. Can I poke a hole in your regression to the mean on Josh Richardson? So,
well, he's not that good of a shooter.
Yeah,
ever.
Right.
I mean, like, that's part of it.
No, know. Right. Like, I was really surprised. Like, I had the exact same feeling you did, and I went back and looked at Josh Richardson in Miami, and so I have a stat called points gained, which is how many points compared to the average player you score with your scoring opportunities. So he was a minus 0.7, which is pretty bad on a given night. So every night he's 0.7 points below league average in Philadelphia. And you know what he was the year before in Miami? A minus 0.7. Like the exact same.
But here's the way here's the way I look at it, right? So if he's in Miami shooting 36% on 6 threes a game 2 years ago, and then he goes to Philly and he's shooting 34% on you know, 4 and change threes per game. If he's the same guy he was in Miami, and he's, you know, more locked in and happier because of their context, and Luka's getting him cleaner looks, that's all they need from him, right? If he's the same guy he is in the same numbers from last year in Philly, then they're going to lose the trade. But I think that the truth is somewhere in the middle in terms of who he is as a player, just because, like, I really can't stress this enough. I mean, Philly just seemed miserable from top to bottom in the bubble, right? Like, they were dragging whenever they were off the court. It just, everything was hard for them. And he was pretty straightforward and blunt about that. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he, you know, pumped his fist a little bit when he heard the news about the trade. And I think he's set up with a great guy. I view Luka almost in the LeBron level in terms of having a halo effect upon his teammates from an offensive standpoint. Like, he's going to draw so much attention this year defensively. I think guys are just going to be sniping wide open looks, just like a player like KCP looks so much better when he's playing alongside LeBron. I think that's sort of what I'm expecting for a player like Josh Richardson.
Yeah, I mean, Luka really could be just truly overwhelming this year. Like, right? Like, he was better. He was better in the bubble.
I'm banking on it.
Right. Like, no, I mean, this is the natural progression of, like, of him. I think that's where we are. Who's a team that you think is either better or less good than everyone else does?
Well, I always start with the teams that made moves during the offseason that get a lot of attention, right? And I think, like, the two teams that I saw really get a lot of buzz would be Atlanta and Phoenix. And I think that, like, I actually endorsed all of their moves. Like, I don't think that they were necessarily terrible. Like, Atlanta, I think they paid a little bit too much on Gallo. I thought the Bogdan move was great. Rondo, I don't really know what to expect on him, you know, coming off of a title and all that. But in general, the idea of spending the summer and giving Trae Young some, you know, good players to play around and boosting that offense up and having it be one of the best offenses in the league, potentially, at least on paper, it all makes sense to me. But I think they're still really bad on defense. I'm not convinced Gallinari is going to be the same guy that he was last year. I mean, to me, he's just a tough guy to count on. I think Trae and playing him big minutes presents a lot of challenges on the defensive end. And I just look across the board with their defense, and it's really, really rough. So I know there's a lot of pretty optimistic projections on them, and I don't know if I'm ready to go quite as high. And then a similar deal for Phoenix. I mean, I expect Phoenix to be a playoff team, and that was the whole point of going out and getting Chris Paul. But he had, like, perfect health last year, right? And if he goes into one of those things where he misses a month because of health, I think Phoenix is kind of, like, right back where they were, you know, relying on some young players and trying to put the pieces together and not really being able to pick up what he's supposed to do. I thought both Aaron Baines and Ricky Rubio were really important veterans for Phoenix last year. They go out the door. Nobody really talks about them because of all the buzz around Chris Paul. I just think, like, the margin for error for Phoenix is a little bit thinner than people realize, and that we should maybe be a little bit hesitant before we crown either Phoenix or Atlanta.
I 100% on both. Like, Phoenix, like, we're still relying on a 35-year-old point guard who's great. And interestingly enough, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth because Chris Paul's the ultimate halo effect, right? Gallinari had the year because
sure.
He's with Chris Paul, but I can't expect Chris Paul to actually be around that much in this upcoming season. Like, I just, at some point it comes to an end here, particularly because I think there's going to be a real storyline to veteran players whose biorhythms and their pattern by which they get back to play are going to struggle. And so Chris Paul is one of those.
It's a phenomenal take. I haven't really seen anybody write that, but I think it's very possible. I mean, I know my biorhythms are off. I'm sure yours are too. For guys that have been playing for 15 years, you know, like just dropping in right around Christmas and expecting to go for 6 months and have that carry into July with some of these players who have been off longer than others and everything else. I mean, if I was the Lakers, I would be so darn cautious with LeBron and Anthony Davis. Like, I would be even more cautious than it sounds like they're talking about being. Like, I wouldn't play them at all in the preseason. I would be limiting their minutes at the start of the regular season, like, pretty drastically. I might even punt the whole first month of the regular season, you know, just to buy them some extra recovery time, because ultimately you just have to be a playoff team at this point with no real home court advantage and all that. But, of course, that would run foul of the NBA's new policy about load management and all that. So you probably have to do it carefully, but I'm with you. I think the risk of injury, just because the disruption is going to be there, we're going to have to track that pretty carefully. And with Chris Paul, it doesn't have to be that he loses two steps and so he can't turn the corner anymore. It just has to be that the hamstring flares up for 4 weeks, right?
Right.
And then where are they as a team? I think that's a real question.
All right, I want to go back to two teams that I'm not as high on as everybody else, and they have superstar players. And so it's a little bit of a question of how much, and we just talked about Dallas. But on my 25 minutes or more thing on Dallas, like, I kind of think they only have five guys. So Luka, Josh Richardson, right? Tim Hardaway Jr., Kristaps, who's not healthy, and Maxi Kleber. Like, is Dwight Powell, who's not healthy, 25, do you feel comfortable with him, 25 minutes or more?
If he's healthy, I do, just because they know how to use him so well. I mean, okay. That's the thing with Carlisle. He just finds you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was just going to say, like, he just knows how to use these guys. So if he's healthy, I would consider him a yes, but not, he wouldn't be a 30-minute guy. I mean, 25 is kind of pushing it, but yeah, I would include him.
Okay, Dorian Finney-Smith?
Okay, that's pretty shaky.
Okay, and then
point taken on that one.
But not Willie Cauley-Stein, not Wesley Iwundu, not Josh Green, not Courtney Lee, not Trey Burke, not Jalen Brunson yet. Like, that's a really thin roster. Now, Luka is unbelievable, but they're really thin, and they've got two of their main guys hurt. So we had them at six. How about the Warriors? So they got Steph, Wiggins, Oubre, Draymond Green. Who else are you comfortable playing 25 minutes a night?
Yeah, I mean, and you rush to put Wiggins and Oubre in that category, and, you know, in an ideal situation, would you play either one of those guys 25 minutes a night?
Maybe not Andrew Wiggins.
Right. Yeah, I'm not the world's biggest Oubre fan either, to be honest. I look, it's a really strange situation because obviously Golden State's going to be better than they were last year, and Steph's going to be able to, if he stays healthy the whole way, like, they're going to be in that playoff conversation, but personally, I think they're going to be a lottery team, and I don't know if that's controversial or not, but I just don't think he has very much help, and that's why I didn't like them spending all that money to go get Oubre. I just don't know what they're chasing at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is, you go to betonline.ag and look at the NBA futures, and so, you know, it's all weird because it's 72 games now, but Dallas is at 42.5. That comes out to like 48 wins, and Golden State's at 37.5. That's above 500 on a 72-game schedule, last time I checked. So, I mean, yeah, I guess that's it. Just if when you go and look at the futures at betonline.ag, I feel like those teams are being thought of pretty highly, and the stars are great, but those rosters are thin.
Well, pound the under is what you're saying. You're giving out five-star locks, Locke.
I'm not. We'll be doing that soon enough on the Locked On Podcast Network. Oh, tease! Oh, tease! All right, my man, you're the best. Ben Golliver, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. It was fun to get back together. Next week, we'll have preseason basketball we'll be talking about.
Oh, I can't believe it. It is coming so fast. Well, I look forward to it, and we'll talk soon.
All right, talk to you soon. He is Ben Golliver. Grab him at the Washington Post. Get him on Twitter at Ben Golliver on Twitter, and subscribe to his Washington Post newsletter. Right now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On Fantasy Basketball.